In the Holy Bible, in the New Testament, Jesus makes the statement in the part called the Beatitudes, where he says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." And it's a beautiful series of descriptions of life experiences and what the ultimate comfort that God will offer you. You know, if you're forgiving, you will be forgiven. If you're sorrowful, you will be comforted. And the result of purity of heart is that you will see God. And it's not exactly obvious when you're just reading through it why that would be so. And it takes a little bit more of the yogic understanding to really come to an appreciation of what Jesus is promising us there. Every Sunday morning, in the hour before this service starts, we have first a fire ceremony in which we put rice and ghee into a physical fire. And then we have the purification ceremony in which everyone as an individual may, if they choose, through the participation of the light bearer, ask for the grace of God. And then go to the altar and symbolically place some aspect of yourself on the altar to be evaporated, to be vaporized by the power and the presence of the inner fire, so to speak. When you turn on the light, it doesn't matter how dark it has been. As soon as that light comes on, all the darkness vanishes as if it has never been there. It's really quite a phenomenal experience that we go through all the time. You come into a dark house, you feel for the light switch, you flip on the light switch, now I can see. And we never really ask the question, where did the darkness come from or where did it go? We just banish it with the power of light. So many everyday experiences in this world are made the way they're made so that we can understand a deeper reality. And that's why all the saints and all the masters often just talk about very everyday experiences and try to explain to us realities that are hard to reach from with our everyday experience, but we can reach them through our everyday experience. And the reason Swami calls that ceremony that we do the purification ceremony is because when everything that interferes with divine perception is taken away, that the divine is discovered to be there. It's a very important nuance, because one of the things that people struggle with, everyone struggles with, whether I'm any good, whether I will ever succeed, whether God really could love me, whether I'm worthy of the path. And the principle, blessed are the pure in heart, is fundamental to our escaping from this oh-so-terrible human condition, which is Satan's best trick, which is try to persuade us that somehow inherently we don't belong to the light. But all that we have to do is take away that which is interfering. Now, today the subject is being tested by the darkness, being tested by God, Satan, our own limitations. However you describe it, the words make less difference. It's the experience that we're all working with. And what all of us work with is this constant cycle of being pulled in certain directions that we imagine will in some way give us something that we want. Even if we're conflicted in our minds about those desires, because often the intellect gets the idea first before the rest of us really gets into gear. People who are addicted to various substances, for example, it's easy to say, I don't want to do this, but not so easy to do, because it just keeps pulling you. That idea that somehow, if I can just dull my consciousness, if I can just satisfy this desire, that the peace that I'm looking for will then come to me. All that we're all looking for, we start with a desire for peace, then that expands to a desire for the intensity of happiness. And we have to go through just this seemingly, from our point of view, endless cycle of experiences in which we watch ourselves time and again make the lesser choice. And we're always making the lesser choice. We're making the lesser choice so often, it really isn't worth commenting on. And it really isn't worth making a big complex about within our own selves. As I often encourage people, bad enough that you make the lesser choice, don't make a complex about it too, because then you have two problems. And long after the lesser choice has run its course, the complex over the fact that you did it will still be torturing you for incarnations to come. And then the lesser choice is to be full of conflict about it. And we're all in this together. And what's so important to understand about self-realization is that all the masters got to their state of freedom along the very path that we're walking. It's one of the great contributions of the Bhagavad Gita in terms of clarifying the New Testament, is in the New Testament, you have Jesus who called himself one with the Father, who described his state of consciousness as being, I am the Son, I am the Son of God. But because the New Testament is singular and there's only Jesus in it, and in the Old Testament we don't have any clear picture of what Son of God might mean, we don't really understand how intimately related to our own experience these masters actually are. In the Gita, it explains that that one which appears as a fully enlightened being started out just exactly as you and me. And every step of the spiritual journey, every lesser choice that we make, every wrong decision, every adventure into darkness, the masters can literally say, been there, done that. Because we don't understand until we experience. And God indeed tests us. We can consider them tests of Satan or tests of God. But life itself is constantly challenging us. It's constantly challenging us to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into that field of our own consciousness, which is going to tell us, what do I really long for? And where will I really find it? And that's the only question there is. What do I long for? And more clearly, where can it be found? Because where I think I will find it is, well, that's the definition of the problem, isn't it? Where I think I will find it is so confusing. When I was at Ananda Village this last week, for much of Spiritual Renew Week, I had an opportunity to give a class. And the class I gave, the only phrase I can use is, it kind of ambushed me. I never really quite know what I'm going to say, but I found myself in very deep emotional waters without actually meaning to go there. And what had happened to me that brought it on, and I'll repeat this for you, but I'm not going to repeat it in the same way. I had gone to the evening concert, and David had decided not to go, so I was there by myself. And there are a lot of young couples at Ananda right now, very fine young couples. So there's this kind of this spirit of romantic love in its most, intoxicating form. You know, the kind that, there it is, the movie magazine kind of, you know, just beautiful young people who are discovering each other. And the fact of the matter is, these are a lot of God-sent combinations. So it's also uplifting. I'm not in any way making light of it. It's necessary and it's happening. And I was wandering up the hill after the concert by myself, and I was in a little parade. I was last in a parade of attractive couples all lovingly holding hands, except there I was all by myself, you know, sort of walking up behind. And this wave of, the only thing I can call it is nostalgia, went over me. Just this nostalgia for something. Who knows for what? You know, I'm very happy to be long time and well married. You know, it's been a wonderful experience to have a lifelong partner. I'm not at all against it. But I think old love is nicer than new love. That's my opinion. So what was I longing for? Do you understand what I mean? The mind has one thought, but there's this nostalgia that kind of sweeps over us. Actually, apparently there's a French, an expression in French. I don't speak the language, but I've heard Swami say it. It's called nostalgia for the mud. Well, you have this kind of longing to go backwards. You have this longing to go back into whatever it was that you imagine was the best place to be. I remember my friend and I, Arati, once, we were down at the Yuba River on a hot summer day. And we were both kind of goofy, and we got into this game. There was a steep rock that came up from the water, and it was a little bit slimy. And we started playing, well, the high-class name of the game was Evolution of the Species. But what we were actually playing was Up from the Muck. And we'd get down in the water and sort of in the sand, and then we'd gradually evolve up the rock until we made it all the way to the top of the rock and became human beings, you know, just sort of playing out that whole cycle. But that's what we're all playing all the time, is that we have allowed ourselves to identify so deeply with this human body and all of its desires and the ego and all of its pleasures and that sensation of being adored. There was a painting in the window of a shop in the hotel in Goa, India, where we, David and I and others, went with Swamiji many times. In January, he would often escape from the winter in New Delhi when he was living in India. He'd go down to the south into Goa, and then he'd invite some of us to join him. And there was this very mediocre painting in the window. And it was an Indian couple. And he was sort of a proud-looking woman all dressed up beautifully. And then her swain over here. And Swami stopped at that picture and he looked at it like this one day. And he said, you can see that he's consumed with lust for her, looking at her in this way. And she's rather proud of herself for having captured him in that way. And every time we'd go by, we'd just see that picture. And it was just so agonizing, really. Because you could identify with every part of it. You could just see it all. This nostalgia for this sort of swirling confusion of ego identity and the fire of youth and the expectation of fulfillment and then the inevitable. And it's not that it's ugly or bad or unnecessary. That's the worst of it. It's not unnecessary because we do have these longings in our hearts. And no amount of somebody telling you, oh, it's not what it seems, is going to do anything for us because that longing moves us. And we have to also understand in a very real way that longing is God implanted. Because we have to walk this path ourselves. Because until we explore every one of those areas, there will always be a piece of us that longs to have it back. And even there I am, walking up the hill, you know, with having a wonderful, fulfilling human life as well as a divine one. And yet this nostalgia comes over me. And I think to myself, my delusion never stops, does it? Swamiji said once, Master, he quoted Master, you're not safe until you have Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Nirvikalpa is the highest state of cosmic consciousness. Sabhakalpa Samadhi is pretty darn good. And it's just a step below. But it is just a step below. And Swamiji himself says, many great saints, and Swami says, in past lives he feels himself. He was all the way up to the edge. And then, in his case, he called it intellectual pride. It just took him away. One more time. He said, you don't go as far away as you do, as you have been, but you're not safe. Now, on one hand, that's pretty darn scary, isn't it? And on the other hand, it's like, just relax, friends. Just trust God. Just trust yourself and have faith. This is simply what we have to do. When Ananda was embroiled for many years in a litigation between what I call the first Church of Self-Realization, which was Self-Realization Fellowship in Los Angeles, and the second Church of Self-Realization, which is Ananda Church of Self-Realization, history is full of the first church enjoying its monopoly, the second church arising, the first church trying to hold its monopoly, the second church escaping, and then you have the third, the fourth, the fifth, and the eighth reformed version of the second, and it just goes on and on like that in America. So we were embroiled in that, being the second. We were embroiled with the first. The leaders of the first Church of Self-Realization are great souls, great devotees of Master, great disciples, great yogis, and yet they lost their way a little bit and felt that they had to do this unpleasant thing, which we managed with the grace of God and Guru to thwart. Now, some people became very alarmed about the fact that great souls could do something that really wasn't so admirable. Okay, I'm just assuming you're accepting my analysis of this. I didn't think it was very admirable. And even Swami Kriyananda one day became quite concerned. If great followers of this path could make such mistakes, and he just lost his bearings for about 12 hours. And the next morning he said, "Well, I don't know what this path has done for others, but I certainly know what it has done for me." He said, "My faith in this path of self-realization is my own, based on my own experience. It doesn't make any difference whether it works for anyone else on the planet. It works for me." Now, my way of resolving it was slightly different. "Wow," I thought, "even great souls can get confused and make mistakes. There's hope for all of us." I took it just the opposite way. It's like whatever standard I myself am living, that's simply the stage that we have to be in. Now, the reason I emphasize this so much is that the biggest difficulty I have seen with people on the spiritual path, truthfully, is not where they are on the path, but how they perceive themselves in relation to the path. And today in our scripture reading, we have this cycle just saying that tests come in many forms. And some of those tests are so easy to deal with, a little smoke obscures the fire, like that. It's just gone and the fire is exposed. And we all have thoughts like that. I'm walking up the hill behind all these beautiful couples and I'm thinking to myself, and, you know, and these are the thoughts that cause us to reincarnate. Ah, to be young and beautiful again, and to inspire in someone that feeling, you know, all of that, which of course causes you to be young and beautiful again and get to inspire in someone that feeling, you know. Is it worth it? Everyone always says, "Think about junior high." That's how they always say it. One of my friends, who was a serious meditator and a serious yogi, when he had his first child and he saw that absolutely helpless thing there, you know, just as cute as could be, but flailing away and utterly dependent and everything about it. He said he never missed a meditation after his son was born. He said he'd been a good meditator before, but he became absolutely, most new parents are less disciplined, he became absolutely disciplined because he actually saw what it meant. Every time those longings come, because every desire of the heart has to be fulfilled. That's what Master said. Because you see, every desire of the heart distracts us. It's the longing for what's behind us instead of the receptivity for what's to come. So I'm walking up the hill in this, and it was not a small feeling. When I was describing it on its spiritual renewing, it completely overcame me. Now I'm past it and I can say it easily. But it was not a small feeling. And I thought, my, there's no end to this, is there? Every thought has to be continuously turned toward God. But with kindness, but with sympathy, some puff of smoke. And just almost minutes after that happened, I was outside by myself under the sky, and everything came back to balance. But some tests are more difficult than that. That's what they call rust on a mirror, when mirrors were silver or metal, and you had to scrub a little bit to get it off. And there's no substitute for that. It always hurts my heart when people will come to me and present some very complicated issue, and then they'll immediately say, I know it's stupid to feel this way. No, no, no. It's not at all stupid to feel this way. You've spent a lot of incarnations working yourself up to this state of delusion. It can't just be tossed off like that. And so all of us, we're attached to people, we're attached to things, we're attached to youth, beauty, pleasure, wealth, position, everybody makes their long list, art, whatever it might be. We have all these values and ways and identifications that just make us who we are in just exactly this way. This is who I am. You know, I was saying to you all when I came in with my teacup, I know it didn't make sense to you, but it made great sense to me. Just every so often, we just fall into this unconscious state. And, you know, I often carry and put the candle on the altar, and I carry my teacup in and put it on the table, and all the wires just crossed. And I'm about to lovingly offer my teacup on the altar. You know, I'm halfway there before, like, something about this strikes me as wrong. And it just symbolized to me all these ways that we just fall back into it. Because it's rust on the mirror. Even if we know it's stupid, I won't use that word. Even though we may know it's the lesser choice. And lesser only because we do have the option of the more expansive choice. But if we're going there, we're going there. In the book that I published, Miracles, Stories of Miracles and Answered Prayers, one of the stories was submitted by a man who has a very colorful past. And he put his own name on it. He was very courageous in that. The first sentence of that story is, you might think that being a drug addict and a devoted disciple of a great master are contradictory. He said, I'm here to say they're not. You know, there you are. You're just caught up in these realities. And if rust on a mirror means a lot of hard work, but then there's the last, which is the baby in the womb. And I've never been pregnant, but every woman I've talked to who's been pregnant reaches the point where they're ready, as they put it, to get the baby out. Its baby's been hanging around in there for a long time, and they're really done. But there is no way. The baby will come out at its appointed astrological moment, and literally not one second before that. And you can have all the goodwill in the world. You can have all the right intentions. You can say it's stupid to have to make it take 9 months for the baby to be born. It doesn't make any difference. Baby doesn't care a whit. It's just going to do what it's going to do. And success on the spiritual path is calm acceptance. Just calmly accepting that I spent a lot of incarnations building myself up to this. I've put a lot of energy into whatever this is, and I've persuaded myself, apparently on a very deep level, that somehow this is a good idea. And even though it's begun to dawn on me that maybe it isn't such a good idea, I'm still just going to have to wait out the full term. And our success on the path, it's a long distance run. You know, that we don't want to be in this, as Master called them, straw fires, where you're just full of enthusiasm, wildly enthusiastic, and then it burns hot and bright, and then all the fuel is gone. And all of a sudden you can't even remember, and you find yourself either back in another body or at the end of your life. I remember a man who came by here. He had been involved, you know, now that we've been here more than 25 years, we've seen these long cycles. Someone who'd been very enthusiastic here in this temple, you know, 20 years ago. And he showed up again. And I don't think the years in between had brought him much peace. And he said, and he told me, his life had not worked out at all as he expected, as he had hoped. And he tried to think of the last time he was really happy. And that's why he was back. Unfortunately, there wasn't much fuel. I think what he was unable to do is exactly what I'm saying to you right now, which is just to say, so I've made these choices, it's gotten me to this point, now I'm back. And whether we have to do that every day. You know, my friend who was writing about being a drug addict, he was pushed all the way to the bottom in that story. And he eventually was arrested and taken to jail. And as he put it, all his clothes were taken away and he was lying in this bare cell in his underwear. Everything was gone. You know, all self-respect, his freedom, everything. And what he discovered was that when there was nothing left, that God was still there. He said, it's a hard test and I wouldn't recommend it for everyone, but it was certainly worth it for me. And that's what has to happen. Our hearts have to crack and crack and crack and crack. Every one of those hard shells, they just have to keep cracking until everything that is impure, which is to say, not our true nature, has been broken off. And yes, that's painful, but less so if you know where you're going. And that's the whole spiritual path. I know where I'm going. And whatever road I'm on, this is the road that's going to take me there, as long as I hold on to God and don't give up. God bless you.